And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 179. Welcome. I'm Silas Lindenstein, and it's just me today. Sort of. It's just me. I have an interview on this episode, but Samantha Rund is on assignment still. With me today, though, is director, writer, Christine Weatherup. She's on the program. I do a short interview with her, about 20-minute interview. She is the director and writer of the upcoming film. Actually, it's now. You can go get it now on your streaming services. It's called See You Next Christmas. So it's you can check it out right now. So I'm going to interview her about it. She's also in the film. She has a part in the film. And then, before that interview, I've got three reviews for you. Three film reviews. One for See You Next Christmas. One for a new film dropping this weekend on Apple TV called Finch, starring Tom Hanks, the Tom Hanks, yeah. And a Netflix film just came out a couple weeks ago. It's called The Guilty. Okay. Starring Jake Gyllenhaal, right? So, and a bunch of other voices, but more actors who use voice. This isn't animated. We'll get into that later. But See You Next Christmas. Do a review on all those. So, yeah, that's what we're going to review today on this episode and have an interview. So I don't have to have it to somebody on the podcast full hour, right? I can vary it. I can have a mini-sode like I did recently with my interviews on the last episode with some filmmakers, just a 20-minute episode. Or I can do a longer one with reviews in it. So is this a Black and a Half episode? Is this a Black and a Half reviews episode? Who knows? Why are we so stuck on labels, people? Let's not do that. It's almost 2022. No more labels. But a big shout out and a thank you to the listeners who have supported this program. Everyone out there, especially our Patreon supporters. Folks, if you want to become a member of the League of Extraordinary Listeners, and for just $1 a month, you can go to patreon.com/blackandahalf. And for just $1 a month, become a member of this League of Extraordinary Listeners. Or you can even become an Inner Circle member for just a little bit more, like Tara Widener, Stefan Ward, Keith Nagel. Have your name said in front of dozens, if not thousands, of people who will listen to this program eventually. It's a beautiful thing. So, go ahead and become a supporter there. Or, of course, you can go to Apple Podcasts and give us a nice 5-star review. That'd be really appreciated. You can share this program with people. Tell them, hey, you should listen to it. If I talk about your film on this, Christine, share it with your friends. They want to hear your interview. They want to know what you said. They want the answers to the world famous 7 questions, right? Go ahead and share it. So, yeah. I didn't mean to get aggressive there. It came out. You know what? I have kids in school. They're in half days. Things are rough. Things are not easy anymore. So that's how it goes. We will, And that's it. Also, if you want to support the program, you can do other things like listen to my other podcast, You're Buying a Home with Silas Lindenstein, where I educate and empower home buyers all over the nation. Go listen to that, yourbuyingahome.com, or wherever you found this podcast and listen to this. You'll find that there. You're Buying a Home with Silas Lindenstein. And, of course, also, if you're looking for a real estate agent anywhere in the country, hit me up. Email silas@blackandahalf, and I can connect you with an agent around the country. Or if you're in the Seattle area, I can help you buy a home. But right now, I want you to open your heart and open your ear holes and listen to episode number 179, Christine Weatherup and Black and a Half Reviews.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.
And here we are again. Thank you for listening to that. Okay, let's get started with these reviews. We're going to start off with the Guilty. It's on Netflix. It's already out. Stars Jake Gyllenhaal. I always feel like I'm saying his name wrong. Jake Gyllenhaal. And then voices of such like Riley Coe, Peter Sarsgaard. So it's on Netflix. It is a crime drama thriller, and it's actually a remake of a Swedish film. And it was, you know, this one actually did originally went out normal. So many of these films that have been coming out have been like, oh, it was going to be out in 2020. It was actually shot during the pandemic for 11 days, which is amazing, but you can understand why. This is interesting. 3 days before production was set to start, began in-person contact with director Anton Fuqua tested positive for COVID-19. The director and Antoine tested negative subsequently, so the production was still on schedule. He directed the entire film from a van with screens that had access to the camera, maintaining contact with cast and crew. But he directed from a van. That was fascinating. Anyway, it's an adapted film. Then Jake Gyllenhaal loved it. And, oh, Danish film. Sorry, Danish. And so he bought the rights to it. And then, who other voices in it? Bill Burr and Ethan Hawke show up as parts in this, which is really neat. Basically, Jake Gyllenhaal plays a police officer, LAPD officer, who's working night shifts of the 9/11 call center. Sort of as you can guess that he's not, it's not what his job is supposed to be. His job is supposed to be just a regular old police officer, but he's in trouble. Like he did something. Because they indicate early on, he's on a call with someone like, hey, don't worry about tomorrow. And he's going to call from a news reporter saying, like, that wants to talk to him. So something's going on in court the next day. And then he's hoping to not have to do 9/11 calls anymore. Okay. While he is on the call, he gets a call from an abducted woman, a woman who's been abducted and is indicating on the phone that there's a problem. And so he becomes sort of obsessed with helping save this woman and figure out what's going on, and sort of frustrated. Everyone else is just doing like their plain job. And he, as an officer, maybe detective, as we were gathering, possibly is trying to, go that extra mile and think about what needs to get done. And everyone's just doing their minimal job. And not the whole film, there are a couple other people in the room with him, right, in the 9/11 center. But most of his interaction, I'd say 90% of the interactions he has is on the phone and with voices. And then he ends up alone in a room trying to just be away from people. A lot of the film is just Jake Gyllenhaal. They're not monologues, but they seem like it. And so it's really interesting, and it's called The Guilty. And I think it really does a great job of Jake Gyllenhaal's acting, and it's magnificent. He does a wonderful job of showing this internalized guilt of something that we don't know of. We both empathize with him, and we, I don't know, at times don't like him, but like, don't trust him. Like, what do you, like, you're hiding something, man. What's going on? What's going on, man? So he does a fantastic job with that. Oh my gosh, I skipped everything. It's a 2021 film, directed by Antoine Fuqua, screenplay by Nick Buzzolato, based on The Guilty by Gustave Molière and Emil Nygaard Albertson. Starts all that. That's all I do, right? Running time is 90 minutes. Rated. Actually, I don't even know if this was rated as a film. Because it's Netflix, right? It should be rated like PG-13 if I was to make a guess, which is pretty much what I'm going to do. Because it was a rated R. It's rated R. So bad judgment, Silas. Yeah, probably mostly it's going to be language and references because it's basically him in a 9/11 center, the whole film, which is kind of cool because I'm like watching like this could be a play. I don't know why, but whenever I see movies that I think could be plays that aren't, I'm like, well, that could be a play. And I get excited. It also is because it shows me that we're going to focus on the acting. And I love that, the acting and the writing. And I think those are the strengths of the film. The three strengths, the mystery is okay. It's enough that I really want to know what's going. I want to see this to the end. This thriller kept me thrilled enough to want to know what's going on. I think there is a level of prediction about it. I'd say it's false that. The negatives about it are that there's a little bit of predictability in terms of plot, I think. I think if you've seen this kind of film before, you know, it's interesting. Like, I would consider this a mainstream film because of both it being on Netflix and who stars in it. And I think when it's a mainstream film, we can kind of make good predictions about how a film's going to end, plot, and what if there's going to be a twist, what it will be. Where if it's an indie film, you have no idea, right? Who knows? This is why it's an indie film, because it's unpredictable and people can't handle that. So it becomes indie, right? This is, I will say that's one of its faults. Second, what other than that... It is what it is. What they made it for, they made it as this isolation film. Like, God, yeah, what a perfect COVID film, right? It felt like they were in COVID during it. Just like, oh, everyone's keeping their distance. We're not. Yeah, when this was shot, there wasn't even a vaccine yet, so everyone's like, yeah, let's just keep away from each other. Gyllenhaal's character interacts with his daughter and his wife on the phone and or his ex-wife. So you get the love there, which I always look for in the film. But by being so isolated, you don't get to really see that much of him other than his internal self. So the point of view of the film is stuck in one place. So you don't get much variety in that. You don't get like little after shots of somebody else. It's all strictly his point of view. And which is the strength and a weakness of the film. But I think the camera flows, the action on it, the camera flow of it is really great for what it is. for moving it through. And I stayed with it the whole time. I really did enjoy this film. I think the lesson from this film that it wants to take away is that presumed guilt is as bad as presumed innocence. Oh. It's another one of those things are not always as they seem. That range. Love it, like it, or leave it. As you may remember on this program, in my reviews, I get three options, the 3L system. You either love it, you like it, or you lose it. Love it is that film that you got to call someone about right after you see it. And they got to know that they have to go see this film, right? Like it is that film that you really enjoyed. You put the remote down to watch it. You know, maybe keep that to yourself. And that can be a guilty pleasure movie too, right? Don't have to be a perfect film to be like it. Like, I love it. Love it, you really got to be a perfect film, I think. Like it, you got to... It can be a bad film, like The Core, as I mentioned later today. Or lose it. Lose it. I watched it so that you don't have to. Like, you should not have to go through what I did to see this film, okay? And for the guilty, I'm going to give it a like it. I didn't love it. I didn't feel like a transcendent experience. Like, I didn't feel different after it. But I did really thoroughly enjoy the film. So I'll give it a like it. Gonna give that a like it. Yeah. Next up here. We are gonna go to Finch. Finch, that's it. That's what it's called. It is Tom Hanks' film. It opens up this weekend. I think it's November 5th, the weekend of November 5th. It the embargo just lifted on it, so I can talk about it. It's a post-apocalyptic science fiction drama directed by Miguel Sapochnik, screenplay by Craig Luck and Ivor Powell. I got to learn these names. Film stars Tom Hanks and technically Caleb Landry Jones, Samira Wiley, Laura Harrier, and Skeet Ulrich. Interesting. Background on the film. Oh, wait. And it's a 1 hour and I want to say it was like 55 minutes. Like it's a whopping film. Oh, you know what? It's not even, info is not even released yet on this. I forget that when I do these new films, folks, I'm doing these new films and, 1 hour is in 1 hour, 55 minutes, I believe. And then, the interesting part about the, oh, and I believe it's the rating on it. Again, what's with this? Like, you can't get ratings. No, here it is. PG-13. Yeah, 1 hour, 55 minutes. I was on the money with that. But PG-13. I guess they technically must have released it into or released it in the theater, so it qualifies. I think it's under embargo still, so nobody's seen it besides press. The summary of the film, on a post-apocalyptic Earth, a robot built to protect the life of his creator's beloved dog learns about life, love, friendship, and what it means to be human. So Tom Hanks creates a robot to take care of his dog. We're in an apocalypse during this film, which is okay. I think that makes the film's history a little interesting. Okay. I'm down with apocalyptic films, right? I love post-apocalyptic films. Wasn't so much middle of the pandemic. I mean, we're still in a pandemic, but like early on, a little like need a little break from reality, right? This film was first announced in 2017 and began production in 18. Then in 19, they shot the film in, it shot in February 2019, Albuquerque, New Mexico. So in that area, and I believe in some in Arizona. But yeah, it was all done May of 2019. So this was supposed to come out originally, Universal Pictures, October 2nd, 2020. But because of the pandemic and shoot theater shut down, it was delayed until supposed to be till April of this year. And then they moved it to August. And then they got bought by Apple TV and released exclusive for Apple TV, right? So, like, and I'm just like, I'm watching this film and going, like, how did you, I was like, at first I thought it was shot during, it must have been shot during COVID, because it's kind of a, I was like, is this like a post-apocalyptic Castaway, right? Because it's just Tom Hanks and this robot and a dog, like most of the film, right? And not to spoil anything for you, it doesn't really spoil anything, because we know that's basically what the film is about. And I don't know whether he worked with a person in this, like that they, I don't know if they green screened him, like just put him, you know, like the Andy Serkis Gollum kind of thing, where an actor was actually doing it and then they changed it to a robot later, or if he's working with nothing. But there's an element that you feel like he must have been working with nothing. Like, I mean, Tom Hanks is phenomenal. He's great in everything he does. Though you're starting with films like this where it's just him, you're starting to see some of his tricks come back. There's a moment of introspection. I think that's a word. Introspection. We'll move on. Where I was like, oh, that's the same look he gave in Philadelphia, right? And oh, here's another look. Oh, isn't that the Castaway look? I mean, I was like, this is Castaway in space, even though it's not space. It's post-apocalyptic America, but it's, he's alone. He's alone, sort of, and he's teaching this robot that he just made in the very beginning of the film about humanity and how to treat this dog. He's programmed it so that it will treat the dog as if it was human and follows the Asimov's rules for AI, right? And robots to not harm humans. It's tough. This film's tough for me because I love the premise. And I love the interaction. I love the lessons on it. I really do. I mean, love might be a strong word. I like them. But, like, one, I don't know if I would have turned on the film if it wasn't a Tom Hanks film. That made me more interested. So that's where you see star power comes in, right? So I wanted to see it because of him. But if it wasn't for him, I'm not sure how much legs this film had. And in some ways, like, him being in it made me think of Castaway. And so I'm like, oh, another monologue film for you, sort of. Except, I mean, you got a robot talking, so it's not really a monologue, but it's just, I had this feeling like I've seen it before. And it's not what I'm looking for in a film, to know that I've seen it before, right? So I want something new, but I like the discovery of humanity through the use of this robot. It's kind of like the Star Trek. They always do that kind of character in somebody, so we learn about humanity through it and learn about what happened. I'll say the pros of the film is visually wonderful. It's a visually wonderful film. I love the setting. I love the story. I love the execution of it. I do love the execution of it. The pros, the cons about this is, like, I don't think I learned any, for a Tom Hanks film, I don't think I got anything extra out of it for him. There was a little letdown being a Tom Hanks film. I wanted it to be just a little bit more, or you kind of want to see growth as an actor, I think, in some ways. Second, though I like the story, there's so much more of the world I wanted to know that was not taught to me that I want to learn. Okay, so that's a fault. I want to learn more about this world. Yeah, and three is like I don't know. Part of me feels like, I don't think they knew what they wanted from this film. I don't know. It felt weird. I felt like there should have been more made. Like, it was a high budget film, obviously, for the effects, but just didn't have a high budget story. I don't know. It's hard. It's not like, I was a little let down. I think I was so excited to see it, and it just wasn't, it just didn't have that extra oomph to it. It's just like it's an all right story. Well, a well-executed, simple story, right? And you know what? I'm going to say that as my final word on it. It's a well-executed, simple story. If you like the apocalypse, you'll like this. If you like multiple apocalypses, you will probably enjoy this film. I think the lesson in this film is there's nothing quite like a good game of catch. Or fetch. I think the lessons of this film are in times of desperation, we will still find beauty. And so I think this film carries multiple messages. I think it's going to depend on your viewer and who you relate to more in the film, to the human, to the robot, or to the puppy. And lastly, I'm going to go over a little indie film called See You Next Christmas. It's again, 2021, shot right before the pandemic, it turns out. It's a 1 hour, 39-minute film. It is a rom-com. Yes, rom-com, and looks like a Christmas movie, so you know Silas is very happy already. It stars, directed and written by Christine Weatherup, who is my guest later today, later in this episode, starring Elizabeth Guest, A.J. Meyer, and Vin Vassio, and Christine Weatherup. She's in it too. Significant part as well. A special shout out to Dave Child as Cliff. He was a crack up to me in this film. The summation of the film. Annie and Tom Clark throw a holiday party every year. Clarkmas. Over the years, it becomes the go-to holiday event for their ragtag group of friends. When chronically single Natalie and Logan continue to run into each other at the party year after year, they begin to wonder if maybe they're meant to be together. So, the focus on it is Natalie and Logan. Those are the two rom-com stars of this, okay? To make it the rom-com. Basically, it is about this. It is all set at a Christmas party every year. Over the course of several years, I won't say how many, you watch Annie and Tom, Natalie and Logan run into each other. And again, this is another one where it's like, it's almost like a play. It all could have taken place at this one house. I'll say one house. But basically this one night of the year, year after year. So see you next Christmas. And one of the great things that appealed to me about this is I do this. I do this thing called the Feast of Seven Fishes every Christmas Eve where I invite people over, except during COVID, and do a sort of a Christmas celebration. And so it reminded me of that and what I always wanted it to be. So I was very excited to hear about the film. And yeah, so I was like, this is terrific. Okay. So what am I going to say about this film? Like, and hopefully Christine's listening. Christine, and you know, I told you, I did find this film really delightful. It's an indie film, and you can tell in the style that it's not, I don't know what it is about mainstream. It's just mainstream is a bit vanilla for everybody. And I know this film isn't maybe not for everybody. It feels very down to earth. It's a relatively small cast. There's some bigger scenes, but it focuses on a few people. It's got that realness of an indie film to it, which I don't see a lot of Christmas films as indie movies, so that makes this a little more unique. You know, usually even the ones that don't make it that big have this smoothed out texture of a mainstream film, which isn't pleasant. It's like the pumpkin spice of rom-coms. I don't know. I knew I would like this film from the very beginning the way the credits start rolling in the beginning of the film, I really liked. It was this like little kickback to retro, this little reminder of tradition that they start off with. I really appreciated the acting in it. That's one of the reasons I'm in love with indie films is there is a forefront. In indie films, you are focused on the acting and the writing, and both of them did really well. I believe this was shot at a very fast pace. I remember talking to her in the interview about, and I mean, there were a couple times that I felt like if that scene had maybe one more shot, it would have been a little smoother, or the actors could have owned the line a little bit more, but they were charming enough to get away with it. Even the things that didn't come out as smooth as maybe they should have. But it also makes it really, it makes it feel real and contemporary and honest, I'll say. It's a film about tradition, and I think it's a film about choosing, about the family you choose rather than the family you're given. I'm trying to separate just the nostalgia of my own and how I love to do that from just the film and who's going to enjoy this. There's some lovely, funny moments in this film that I think everyone will enjoy. And I think it is a film about, it's also a film about growing up from your teens and figuring, not teens, but like your 20s and figuring out what you want out of life, of figuring out your expectations and how your relationships with friends change. There's a lot to it. There's a lot to it. And I think people should check it out. So my best things about the film, I'll say the acting. I will say I love the acting. I loved the story, and more to get specific in here, I love the combination. Well, I mean, rom-coms and Christmas stories go together, holiday stories go together well, but this is, it just doesn't feel like a beaten down story. Like a lot of rom-coms are overdone. This doesn't feel like it because this, like, why doesn't this happen more often? Like a lot of people have holiday parties year after year, but they don't, we don't see that captured on film that much. And the focus of the friends. And I don't understand why not? It's a common story. So it's kind of, but it's like, it's a common real story, but it's not a common story you see on film. And that's fascinating. So, I really enjoyed that. You know, the worst things about the film, I try to do the three worst things about the film, and I'm having trouble here getting some because I was so delighted by it. I said, like, it was a little rough. I think there were moments that you could tell that it was a quickly shot film. I think if you just don't like rom-coms, you're not gonna, this one won't win you over either. And then the only other fault, I was like, I kind of want to see more to the characters. I want to see a little bit more of them outside of the Christmas, but that's the whole premise of the whole story, right? So, but that's also delightful that you made me so interested in the characters that I want to know what else is going on about them. I'm starting to force myself out of this three worst, because if I like a film, I don't just have to find stuff to complain about all the time. And I think the lesson on it is really, I think the lesson is everyone should find tradition. I think the lesson on this is, another lesson on it is, the gifts, sometimes the gifts you give friends is company. And that's what I like to think. We always think of our party that we have at my house as, it's kind of our gift to our friends, is this wonderful meal. I think it's wonderful. I cooked it. This meal and company is a good friend. So a lesson should be learned there. And I think it's important to find the family by choice, right? The chosen family, which is our friends. So I'm going to say, go out, see this film in the 3L, in the 3L experience, choices, my 3L system. I'm going to give it a very strong like it. It is a film I will be recommending to people when they're looking for holiday films that they hadn't seen before. Let's say, check this out. Okay. And now coming up on this, those were the three reviews. Okay. So we did See You Next Christmas, give it a strong like. Finch. Oh, I think I forgot to give it. I'll give that a like it. Middle of the road like it. And then The Guilty, I'll also give it a like it. So three films I like this year, or this episode. But right now I want you to hold on to your hats and listen to this interview I have. Writer, director, actor. So she's a triple threat. But here's Christine Weatherup and my interview with her. An exclusive Black and a Half interview. I've been so excited for this because,
oh yeah,
yeah. Ever since when I read the premise for this, because I do this,
yeah.
I like have Silasmas, yeah.
Chrissymas is my,
okay. Is it?
yeah.
See, technically, I mean, I've piggybacked. It's called the Feast of Seven Fishes, and I do it every.
Are you Italian?
I have an Italian background, and I discovered it like 10 years No, I discovered it like 13 years ago. I read about it. And it started off just me and my daughter. Like, I'm like, doing Feast of Seven Fishes Christmas Eve. And I've had this dream of having the house that everyone goes to at Christmas because I knew, or Christmas Eve, because I knew of a house that did that back in college. And so 2019, after doing it with family and slowly other people coming, I had all these different people from my life that came on Christmas Eve to spend it. And we make a, I make a lot of different seafood dishes and then cap it off with some cioppino. I make a big pot of cioppino. And then 2020 hit. So then racked down into some immediate family that was visiting. But I still do it. And so I was like, wait, this is me. This is like a romantic version of what I do. Like, I want to know. So it's inspired by your life.
Yeah. I do an annual holiday party. And so it was like, you know, I wanted to write an indie film that I could, you know, get made, that I could pull off. And I was like, why? And I, you know, the holidays are such a time of reflection.
Yeah.
You know, and so to think of how people change every year and over the course of, you know, I've been throwing this party for over a decade. You know, I've seen friends, you know, go in and out of relationships. I've seen people grow.
Yeah.
People change. And some friends I only see once a year at this party. Like, we have the best of intentions. We'll say, oh, yeah, we should get together. Yeah, we'll be in touch. And then somehow a year passes and we meet at the party. And so, you know, between that and loving romantic comedies, slowly the idea came and I wrote a story around it.
Well, that's fantastic. Yeah. Someone I know does a New Year's party. That's been, there's some people who I'm not even friends with. I was like, but that's the one year I see them. We talk.
Right?
Otherwise, and they're actually the more exciting people now because of Facebook, right? Because everyone else, I'm like, well, I know what's happened. I don't know it.
Well, it is kind of fun, those people you only see once a year. Yeah, like, I kind of treasure that, you know, because then you also see the most change and growth. You're like, whoa,
true.
You're engaged?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Like, yeah, they're pregnant one year.
Right.
Okay, I can't spoil anything. So I was trying, like, I was going to say a moment that I was sad about in the film, but I can't. I'm like, oh,
well, you'll tell me. You'll tell me later.
Yeah, I was like,
okay.
Awesome. So did you ever write it for a play at all, as a play? Because I was like, wow, what a great setting for a play. Because you can, like, it's one location. I can never think of that. Like, that's the hard part about writing. So I do some writing and little indie film stuff myself, but like, just getting something set at one location. Yeah.
I never thought of it as a play, but the one location was appealing as a filmmaker because I had another script that I, you know, had written that I was going to make my first feature. And then just the price point, it had a million locations, million characters, those things. Mm. And you start budgeting and you think, well, that might take a while till I make that film. And so this was the thing that I knew I could pull off. I had all the Christmas decorations because of my annual party.
Okay.
And then it was like, and I will tell you, you know, there's two locations in the film. I'm giving a little spoiler away.
Okay.
They move at one point halfway through. And so, but the first location was my apartment. So I knew I had access to to it. And so it was sort of a thing that I knew I could pull off in the way that a play being in one or two locations is really convenient. Yeah.
To my wife's chagrin, I've shot a couple films in my house or around my house for the 48 hour like film project.
Yeah.
Cause I'm like, it's just a day, hon. It's just one. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that,
your wife is correct. It is not advisable. I will tell you
how did a feature. I mean, that's a bigger deal than what I did. Like, did you feel like my house has taken over completely?
Oh yes. Well, also, we lived in a one bedroom apartment.
Yeah.
And so with one bedroom, I mean, it's a party, you know, it's set at a party. So most of it is set, you know, in the main space.
Yeah.
But that meant our bedroom became Video Village. You know, that's where all the crew members went. And so we would literally put our bed on its side so that we could fit more people in there and all the equipment. And so, you know, we also shot it sort of because it's set over these different years. We would shoot 3 days at a time. We'd do a long weekend and then we'd have the rest of the week to sort of flip the set to be the next year.
Yeah.
And then shoot the next weekend. So it helped us spread it out, but it was still, I think we shot the whole film took 16 days, which is a pretty quick feature, but ambitious. And about, I think it, 9 of them were in our apartment.
Okay. Yeah. That's impressive.
Yeah. That's one word for it.
No. I really liked, now I'm a sucker for rom-coms as well. I do enjoy them, and I like the premise. If I like the premise and I go in there, I'm like, I got a positive attitude to start. Though I'm a film critic too, so it's, so there's a mixed bag. But right from the start, I love the opening for this. The tone.
Oh, thank you.
Like, I just felt like the tone was set perfect for it. And before the first words were actually said, like, I turned to my wife. I said, I'm going to like this film. I'm going to like it. I think I'm going to like it. Like, I think I liked how she's starting this. And yeah, and then it was like off to the races just to enjoy the film. I think that's so important to be able to set the tone from the beginning.
Yeah.
There's so often these films that I know I'm going to like. It's in that first 30.
But then it takes a while to get started sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes.
You know, it's like when somebody tells you to watch a new TV show and they say, oh, just get past the first 4 episodes and it gets good. Like, I'm not sitting through 4 episodes. So I think the opening, I'm glad you said that, because, that was something that we spent a long time really to set that tone. So you kind of got that sort of warmth and that feeling of, togetherness, all the stuff that the holidays bring about, but that you might not, might sometimes can take a while to get into when you're watching a film. We wanted to start with that. So it makes me very happy that you felt that. Yeah.
What time of year did you shoot this in?
So we shot it right after the holidays, January and February of 2020.
I get curious when I watch these. I'm always like, is this like July? How are they?
Yeah. Is it 95 degrees when they're wearing their sweaters?
Right. I'm always wondering that.
Well, we were in Los Angeles, so it was warmer. Well,
regardless if it's going to be, it's not going to be.
No snow on the ground.
Right.
But it was literally right before the lockdown, right before COVID and everything.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. I was thinking about so much. I was like, can rom-coms exist in a post-COVID world? How do we do this? I'm waiting to see the film.
I think more so than in a post-COVID. Yeah. I was struck when we were editing, which, we had great plans to edit in a room together like normal people would a film, but the whole film was edited over Zoom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like everything.
And like everything, our whole world. And, it struck me, I hadn't consciously made a film about togetherness, but the film is, it's about getting together every year, about friendship, about chosen family, about all those things. And then here we are editing a film in isolation. I'm watching cuts of the film alone in my living room, and it just, the importance of the film, of the message of bringing people together and that we are connected, became more prevalent than I had realized was in the script. And because of that, I think going forward, we're craving that.
Yes.
We're at a time where we want to go back to that. Unfortunately, things are slowly coming back to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there is a hunger. I mean, I hope there's a hunger for this kind of film and just romance, just that hopefulness that genre brings.
Yeah.
After the last year and a half we've had, I think everybody is wanting some of that hope.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Like, yeah. I binged a lot of rom-coms during the
year. Right?
though I do feel like there did hit a point that I started thinking, like, I can't take this thing seriously. They have no masks. Like, what is going on? Like, or just nervous, about people. Why are they all together?
You're like, they're really close. Like, they should move. Yeah.
So now I know everything. Everything right now that I see without masks, I just think, oh, this took place in the before times. So that's,
I thought you were going to say, oh, they're all vaccinated. It's okay.
I wish. This just a wonderful film. Thanks for bringing this and sharing that story to everybody. Look, whenever someone comes on our podcast, I have world famous seven questions,
yes.
So I'd like to ask them of you. Do you know them?
I did my homework.
You did
so
do
I
homework.
Do, but,
oh, okay. They didn't ask me this time. So I was like, okay, maybe sometimes I always was nice to spring them on people before they ever knew.
Well,
something.
I won't say I haven't practiced.
You didn't memorize them.
No, I didn't.
Okay. Okay. Wonderful. All right. Question number one. What are you most nerdy about?
So my background is as an actor. And because of that, I think I get real nerdy about performance. You know, I can pick apart a performance when I'm watching, you know, which sometimes can, I don't think it takes away the enjoyment, but it's watching it with a more critical eye in a different way. But just even also background, where people come from, like our cast, you know, we had some people who come from the comedy world, and like, their acting training is it's totally intuitive and it's improv based, or, you know, versus some people who are, you know, method actors and Stanislavski and, you know, Strasberg. And I just find it fascinating. And also putting them all in a room together is exciting and fascinating, and seeing how they connect, you know?
I totally connect with that. Totally. Same here there. Number two, what is something that you love to eat?
Well, we were talking about Italian food early. I'm like such a sucker for pasta, and I would say pesto. Like pesto, I discovered it as a child, and I feel like if I see it on a menu, I have to get pesto.
I love
which is kind of out of vogue now. I think it was bigger when we were children.
I didn't know people in Southern California were allowed to eat pasta. I didn't know that. I thought it got banned. Last time I was there, I felt like the giantest person around.
I also make pies. I am an award-winning pie baker. Are you actually?
What kind of pie? Yes, what kind of pie?
I make many kinds of pie, but the two ones I've won awards for, one was a vegan blackberry pie, which not vegan, but I did the vegan category.
Yeah.
And then the other was a raspberry cream pie that was a sort of three layer. I love raspberries. It was the summer. So my best friend and I, we bake pies together.
Okay. I like that.
Yeah. Come down to Southern California.
I know. Now I've got a motivation. Okay. Disneyland.
Yeah.
And pies.
And pie.
And pie. Okay.
Hey, that sounds like an ideal trip.
Okay. Number three, what's something that you love to drink?
I mean, I feel like I should be answering these in like a holiday manner.
But it's real. Like, I mean,
I'm not drinking.
It's not the holiday. Well, okay, it is the holidays, but this is evergreen, right? This content will be out here forever. So, yeah.
Yes, yes. I would say an Arnold Palmer. I love a good Arnold Palmer.
You're quickly becoming my best friend. Like, I swear to God. Yeah, no, like, I was just the other day with my wife. I was like, you know what I'm just feeling like? I just want an Arnold Palmer. Like, I just grabbed some. I've been doing it in the fountain machines lately. Like, grabbing some of that.
It definitely elevates in a fountain machine.
Absolutely.
Because I feel like a fountain drink is fine. But when you do the mix, you're like, this is, you know.
And it just goes together.
Something fancy.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Number four, what kind of music do you love?
I have very eclectic tastes. I would say, you know, like I love a lot of like old standards. I like sort of like old standards and jazz, but I also like novelty music.
Novelty music?
I also
like Weird Al?
Novelty music. Like Weird Al or Richard Cheese.
Okay.
But I also like, you know, Simon and Garfunkel. Like if you look at my playlist, lots of things that don't go together and many that are embarrassing to some people, but I'm proud of it. I stand by it.
You're your own
Pink
XM
Martini
station.
Yeah. Too, which are a Pacific Northwest Pink Martini, Portland though. So yeah. Yeah. I'm very strong. And I love Christmas music to no surprise.
Are you an all year round Christmas music?
Well, because of editing the film, I had the excuse. I didn't have to be ashamed of it.
Right. You're like, you know, it's for work.
There's a time for everything. Yeah. But, you know, I don't know if for the rest of my life I'll be in all year round, but I liked having the excuse for the last year or so.
That's nice.
Okay. Yeah.
Number five, what do you love to create?
Well, I think making a movie is, you know, such a creation. And I think the thing that's special about that is the collaboration, because when you create something on your own, which there's a time and a place, and I love doing, I mean, baking is kind of creating on your own, and I love doing that. But there's the element of surprise when you get a bunch of different artists together and they bring different things to the table and you all work together. And what started as a kernel of an idea in your head builds into something that you couldn't have imagined is so exciting to me. So
nice
films I love to create.
Yeah. Number six, what's a game you love to play?
Well, what's funny? So when I did my research, listening and knowing your seven questions, I was like, what is a game? And I asked my husband, and he's like, mind games? I was like, what are you talking about? Such a husband answer.
Right.
But I will give you an obscure game, actually, called Hamster Roll. I'm saying it because it's a German game.
Hamster.
And it's kind
of,
yes, Hamster Roll. Okay. I don't know if that's how it's said, but I assume with a German, you know, it's like Jenga, but it's a wheel. And there are like pieces along the wheel. And then you put a piece in and you take different pieces out and you're trying to get rid of all your pieces. But the wheel starts moving while you are doing it. So it's like a rolling Jenga.
Is it a collaborative game? Or is it
like, you play it with other people,
are you all trying to work on it together?
Oh, no.
Okay. I've heard that about German games. Like I was told that about German games that after World War II, they said like, we got to stop trying to kill everyone. Let's do collaboration games. And so I was wondering,
I think we read the same Wired article. I think because Settlers of Catan is one of those games that is a collaborative in that same way. I mean, Hamster Roll can be, but you can also, you're trying to win ultimately, and you're trying to, sometimes you can be mean and sabotage people. So I think Hamster Roll was pre-World War II. Right. I don't know.
I mean, they still play soccer against people. So obviously it's not like
it's true.
Anti-competitiveness, but okay.
That's an interesting fact. Yeah. I like that article as well.
And final question. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
You know, I hope, you know, art is fleeting. And so making things sometimes, you know, you don't know who is going to watch it, see it, hear it, you know, whatever type of art, enjoy it, whether, you know, food. I'm talking a lot about food today. Mm. But I know I'm getting hungry. but I think a lot of the art, there's no rhyme or reason to the projects that I've done. You know, if you look at the things that I've created, I did a short that was a sort of post-World War II melodrama before making this feature, which is, you know, a holiday rom-com.
Yeah.
But I think for me, the thing that connects them is an interest in character and in people who grow and people who change, people who can be difficult and sort of the gray area. And so the art that I make, I hope, you know, is about people understanding others and kind of coming together even with differences.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I can leave a legacy of that with my work, you know, rather than, I mean, we are living in such a polarized time, and that I'm most interested in finding ways that we can understand each other, not necessarily, you know, agree with one another, but come to a place of interest and curiosity rather than sort of blocking out anything that you don't like.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what I hope my art does.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
That got a little heavy, but
no, hey, that's good. That's what it's meant to do.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Oh, I'm good. Yeah. Now see, it's scary when
tables
it's turned
have been
on
turned.
You. Well, you mentioned you love rom-coms. What's your favorite rom-com?
See you next Christmas.
Well, that's the right answer.
That's the right answer.
But what's your second favorite, if you had to pick a second?
A favorite rom-com?
Okay, I know it's tough. It's like picking your favorite child.
Like, there's part of me that's like, I mean, I think when I first started admitting it was back when I'm a lot older than I look. Like when Harry Met Sally, I just don't know how I can.
That's kind of the right answer. That's right? My favorite.
Like, I don't know how to, like, is there a better one made yet? Like it was just so, like, because you know what? The first time I watched it, I didn't even like it because I thought
it's
it was so
funny
slow.
How that can happen.
It was so slow. And I was like, I don't understand this. Why are people?
Yeah.
And then I watched it again and there's something in my brain. I think it must have been age evolution or something that got me to understand it. And I'm like, oh my God. And now, like, if it's on, it's one of those
I have
movies
to watch
that
it.
You like, you put down the remote or whatever, however you're watching things. I still have, well, I have YouTube TV, but whatever. but I put down a controller of some sort. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's one of those ones that's on and you put down for good reasons. You're like, oh.
Yeah.
I say for good reasons because I also do that for The Core, which is an awful movie, but it is so, it's so bad that I love it so much.
You can't look away. Oh my gosh.
I have to watch this film. Watch. And I go, honey, come. This is the part. This is the part. Well, they go through. It's so ridiculous. But When Harry Met Sally is just such a classic and, but then I'm like, well, and then every other Meg Ryan movie until she became a soldier in a movie and then stopped doing rom-com.
being in Seattle, maybe Sleepless in Seattle is
I wasn't from Seattle at the time it came out, I will say. Mm. So, but I do know that house. I do know the house that we drive by it and go like, oh, that's the house. That's the house. And that's cool. Where his mom had the fake orgasm. That right there. that's where Meg Ryan had.
That's
I had what she's having. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question, though. Oh, I gotta be on my toes for rom-com.
I know.
My favorite Christmas movie until now has been, has been The Ref.
The Ref is so good, and nobody watches
it. It's like, it's one of those hidden things. And now a little extra, because people can't talk about liking that film anymore. Right?
I feel like I discovered The Ref right before Kevin Spacey, and now I'm like, I can't, feel weird advocating for it.
Well, I advocate for the film, and I'm like, oh, it's a Dennis Leary film. Judy is in it.
What is her last name?
I almost said Dench, and I was like, that's wrong, but.
Davis.
I knew it started with a D. But I loved it. I used that film in a communications class because I was like, this is so funny. I was always advocating for that. People need to watch this. It is so funny. It's Christmas.
It's so good.
Yeah.
I love Christmas movies that aren't necessarily about Christmas, like the Christmas adjacent, like the diehards of the Christmas world, where it's like, or any Shane Black movie that's set at Christmas. Yeah. You know, like there's something fun about it. Sort of Christmas being part of it, but also not being like the main event. Yeah.
Because sometimes just Christmas happens and there's no miracle. It's just things are just going on.
Yeah.
But it's also the perfect time if you're going to do stories of redemption. Nobody thinks of like Easter, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or whatnot. So
maybe that's the next untapped market, the Easter film.
The Easter film. Keep Mel Gibson away. See you next Christmas. So it's going to be video on demand. Is that where we're?
Yes, it will be available on digital platforms starting November 9th.
I mean, we're all going to just watch it on Amazon, but but sure, if there's some other one you use,
iTunes, check that Apple out. TV.
Apple TV. Yeah,
Sony PlayStation. There's a number of.
Okay,
them.
There's a bunch. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I joke, but I have to. I'm Seattle. I have to support my local monopoly. So. check it out. See you next Christmas. This has been director, writer, and star Christina Weatherup. Thank you for joining the show.
Thanks for having me. So fun to be here.
Yeah, it's great. So in the intro I'll give a lot more information on this too. So
sure thing.
So Black and a half. Live long and prosper.